Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Daily Friend. Unfortunately, we did not have an episode yesterday because the team was out and about in the East Rand in Ekurhuleni, looking at social farms, and we'll be putting up a video about that soon. But I'm joined in the studio today for our regular discussion with Marius Ruert.
How's Nick?
And Sargon.
Hi, Nick.
So I think we've got to start off with a story that's quite a lot of fun, and I think it gives us an opportunity to say we told you so. Which is that something has gone very awry with BE in a particular case. Please tell us more about it, Sarah.
Oh, my heart sinks in every possible way on this one, particularly because I'm a chocolate lover. But the bottom line, what it amounts to is that there's a company called Beyer, B-E-Y-E-R. It's a Belgian chocolate manufacturer, but based in South Africa. Okay. The factory owner is a Belgian. And the Department of Labor, in all their glory, descended upon this poor factory in Kempton Park and told them that they employ too many black women.
What?
And that they must employ more black men. Now, this is so Monty Python-esque, it defies description, because it's not good enough to employ lots of black people. You've got to make sure that they divided equally between men and women. And I suspect that one of the reasons a lot of women are employed, and there are probably a lot of reasons why women are employed, is that they probably can handle the chocolates more delicately than the men. Mm. The converse would be, for example, that you can only have probably so many women firefighters. You need probably a preponderance of males because of the heavy lifting, so to speak. And that's how jobs work. That's how science work. And that is how affirmative action in this country used to work. It used to accept the limitations or the specifications of an environment. And now we're having those, I don't even want to begin to know what to call them, telling this poor factory that they must employ more black men to reflect the demographics of the country. Lunacy has just gone to a whole new level.
So, Marius, this is kind of always how these sort of great social justice planned economic ideas end up. They start off with this sort of lofty goal of ensuring equality and harmony and prosperity, and then eventually they end up going through the bureaucracy sausage machine, and in the end we're producing results like this.
It's crazy. We've already seen that the government has wanted to allow the Minister of Labour to be able to set quotas for different sectors. I mean, it's crazy. Imagine the Minister of Labour says to whichever sector, you have got to have 70% of all your staff has to be black, or whatever the case is. I mean, it's madness, and we'll see. I mean, there's no ways you can grow an economy when you've been told that X amount of people have to be of this race and so on, in that you employ. It's Kafkaesque.
It is Kafkaesque. I mean, you'll probably find that if you look at the nursing sector, public or private, it's dominated by women, even though there are male nurses starting to qualify here and practice here, but they would probably be proportionately way beyond the demographic of the country. What are you going to do? You're going to say, you know, get rid of half the black female nurses and train black male nurses.
But the fact is that
just bizarre.
Some, like, men have are better at some things than women, and women are better than some things than men. Not that, for example, women are generally, as you say, nurses. That's not to say a man can't be a nurse, but in general, that's different genders tend to gravitate to different occupations and so on.
And as you pointed out, there's probably a very legitimate reason for why this company would want to hire more women than men, which suits that particular company's needs. And so we're really undermining prosperity in the economy if you kind of trying to rigidly fit everything into a checklist.
Absolutely. And particularly looking at chocolate, and I look very, very longingly at chocolate, so this really goes straight to my heart. The creation of handmade chocolates is quite an elaborate affair and requires a lot of fine dexterity. So here we have it. I mean, there aren't a lot of women in the lumberjack trade, as far as I'm aware.
But But also, I think this shows the government's priorities are completely twisted. The Labor Department should be doing everything it can right now to ensure that there are more jobs. And yet, instead, it seems to be going around making sure that companies look exactly the way they're supposed to on the spreadsheet.
Well, I suspect the problem with the Department of Labor is it probably reflects a lot of government thinking, and that they keep talking about job creation. You can't have job creation unless you have business creation. The one flows from the other. That it doesn't stand alone.
And you can't have job creation if you're harassing business owners.
Exactly, and sending good chocolates out of the country.
The only reason we should have inspectors of labor is to go make sure that workplaces are safe. Yeah. I mean, it shouldn't be going to make sure that doing these racial bean counting exercises, that's not what labor inspectors should be doing. I mean, that's what they do in South Africa, but that's not what they should do.
Yeah, no, exactly. I think that's a very good point. All right, so that's a wonderful example of how quotas and BEE are a very twisted system. And over the next year, we're going to be talking a lot more, I think, about our ideas for empowerment that are far superior to the model of BEE, that take race out of the equation and actually uplift people. But we'll talk about that on another show. So there's been a somewhat troubling report that's come out from PricewaterhouseCooper, which has said that currently, without the coronavirus getting too much worse, South Africa stands to lose something in the vicinity of 200 million rand and maybe even up to 1,000 jobs just in the tourism sector alone. And this is because there are so many fewer Chinese tourists expected to be traveling around the world this year and coming to the country because of the coronavirus, which has shut down large parts of travel, lots of travel in mainland China, and ensured that the Chinese economy is going to have to fight an uphill battle to get some of the growth numbers that it's used to. Morris, this is a changed. Everyone didn't used to take China so seriously, but it looks like the world is changing.
Well, I was reading something the other day that the last time there was this big kind of virus outbreak in China was SARS in about 2003. Mm. When that happened, China was made up about something like 3 or 4% of the global economy. Now China makes up nearly 20% of the global economy. Mm. So when things go wrong in China, it's much bigger implications for the rest of the world in terms of trade, in terms of tourism and so on. I'm sure if you look in 2003 or 4, the number of Chinese tourists was probably a very small fraction of what it is today to South Africa. And not just here, to many other countries also going to be suffering from this. But I mean, it also just shows you tourism is actually such a low-hanging fruit for South Africa. So there's not that much that we have to do to actually get it to even grow our tourism sector more and to be able to get the economy going. But we always, South Africa is very good at, scoring own goals.
Here's a thought. If we allowed the tourism industry and all other industries to operate of their own accord, and you cut the legislation and the regulations and all that sort of stuff, and you didn't put impediments in the way, our tourism, I would hazard a guess that as significant as tourists from China are, if we have to take a drop of 200 million because they are not here, it shouldn't create such a dent in our tourism.
No, exactly. Our industry is far more fragile than it should be.
Yeah, absolutely. And particularly, I think Chinese tourists are largely tourists who go to the anticipated normal sort of high status or high focus places, whereas the country has so much to offer, so much more, particularly specialized ecotourism, things like that. And if those are built up, then you can take the knock to some extent and not be, you don't see an industry ruined as a result.
But South Africans, we seem to think we're special in global terms. Mm. And with factors, there's some stuff that we get here in South Africa, but a lot of stuff you get in South Africa, you can get anywhere else in the world. And we've got to remember, we're a long-haul destination from all the, major tourist sending places in the world. So if we want somebody to sit on a plane for 12 hours, we really need to make sure it's worth their while, easy for them to get here. They don't have to worry about birth certificates for their kids and so on when they arrive here. We've also got to make sure the place is safe as well. So, that goes for South Africans and visitors. That's, a problem that we all face. But, that's the thing. South Africa needs to work hard to make sure it's a place that people want to come to. People aren't just going to come here because we're South Africa.
So I'm going to go out on a bit of a limb. I'm not a specialized economic analysis. analyst. Sorry. So take this with a bit of a pinch of salt. But I've seen it suggested out there that there's going to be significant consequences for the Chinese economy as a whole because of the restrictions imposed by coronavirus. That instead of getting the sort of above 5%, above 6% growth that China's used to for a very long time, that they might even see something closer to 4% or even 3.5% growth this year, which would be quite devastating for them. And that could have repercussions through the entire world economy. Now, it remains to be seen if that's actually going to be the case. But I think exactly as you guys were kind of saying about the sort of fragile economies and how we need to do better and how we think we're exceptional, South Africa has actually been quite fortunate during the Zuma years in a lot of ways, that the world was recovering from the global crisis of 2008, 2009. And so we took a big knock in 2008, but even though we had quite bad economic policies, the global environment has been relatively stable for that time. But if we go through a period of serious instability, such as caused by a disease outbreak or a war or some other sort of unforeseen circumstance or even another big recession, we are currently, there's no more reserves. Mm-mm. The reserve tank is empty. We are running kind of by the seat of our pants. And this is why our economy really needs to be in a better state, because these are the good years in a sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If the global economy turns bad, South Africa has very little fat to live off of. Mm.
We were lucky in often Becky, as there was surpluses, the place been run fairly well and so on. But I mean, now we had quite a solid boat in 2008-09. Now our boat's much more rickety, I think.
Exactly.
So if a wave comes, we might be swamped this time.
And it's fascinating. I mean, I remember the trade union opposition to gear. And the trade unions 10 years later, were still 10, 12 years later, are still going on the socialist communist track.
Mm.
And yet now's an opportunity to look back and see under what regime we did well and under what regimes we are not doing well.
And the more power the unions have had in government, the less well we've done.
And disproportionate to their power in society.
Very much so.
And so just an interesting stat that I've just seen now is that China is the non-African countries, China is the seventh highest sending destination for South Africa.
Oh, okay.
So it's 100,000 people come every year from China. So
we have to make up.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. No, we have to make it up. All right, and hopefully the virus is contained. It does seem to be more under control than it was previously, but some experts suggest that they're worried that there could be a recurrence if standards slip, so there needs to we'll watch that with interest. But we've had some good news, which is that at a summit in Addis Ababa, the capital of Ethiopia, the American Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, gave a speech praising many positive developments on the African continent and some of the good ideas, such as the privatization of state-owned enterprises, which is happening in Ethiopia. And he said, and there were also examples of failed socialist projects. And he talked about Zimbabwe, and he mentioned South Africa was about to go down this path. So this is the strongest rebuke that any foreign government, I think, has given about expropriation without compensation in South Africa, which is, I think, very good news.
It was extraordinary because it wasn't like the Dutch opposition to or discomfort with EWC, which was very foofy and flaffy and diplomacy and all that stuff. This was said that to go down this route is disastrous. It happened in Venezuela, it happened in Zimbabwe, it happened in Tanzania. He was obviously specifically referring to the African countries. It was unequivocal. It was the only thing he said about South Africa, and it was probably item number 34 on his list of things to say. In other words, he put us in our place absolutely in every way. And that, whatever people feel about the States and whatever people feel about the Trump administration, he is a powerful, powerful voice against EWC.
Hmm. I think we've also seen that the ANC, for a long time, we've talked about it before on the podcast, has this ability to play a dual role, a sort of two-faced role in the world, to be a revolutionary socialist organization and a reformist, modern, pragmatist, forward-thinking, normal country. And what EWC is kind of forcing, and this is the inevitable result of it, is that the ANC is no longer going to be able to play both sides of that fence. It's going to have to pick a team. And right now it looks like a lot like the ANC wants to sit in the company of countries like Venezuela, Cuba, its old friends, rather than join the normal nations of the world. And the US has shown now the first sign, I think, that it's not going to just, you know, ignore.
Well, I think it's been tied to something. Venezuela, Cuba, North Korea, whatever it is, do not provide us with the opportunities of an AGOA.
Exactly.
And the American government has quite clearly said that if we carry on this loss of rights path, that they will take us off the list of preferential trade. And I think it was in the region of $217 billion. It was a large money by our standards.
And in the competition between world powers, if we're going to pick a side between the United States and China, for example, I think coronavirus has showed that the Chinese have their own problems that they want to deal with. And our government's poor track record suggests, to me at least, that the Chinese might be a little bit skeptical about investing too heavily in our government here, worries that any money they send here might just be stolen or expropriated for corrupt purposes.
Sorry, before I could, the Chinese have actually told the ANC that they don't want, that they mustn't go this route. They don't want a South Africa that is just a lapdog that's going, because they want a decent economy here for their own less than altruistic reasons. But whatever the reasons are, a statist.
Yeah, if China wants.
It's not what China wants.
If China wants a vassal state, it can get them much more cheaply in Kenya, in Zimbabwe. South Africa is a place where if China wanted to really show that it's a true, they can build a country into an ally.
Well, apparently, after Nenegate, the ex-president Zuma got a dressing down from, I don't know if it was a Chinese ambassador, but somebody important in the Chinese government. And because one of the Chinese state banks owns a big chunk of Standard Bank. And obviously they lost a lot of money with Nenegate, with all that money when the stock markets took such a knock. And so, I mean, the Chinese, they, as you guys say, they're not, I mean, obviously they want countries kind of on side. They also don't want these vassal states. I mean, you can already see they've turned their back on Zimbabwe to a large degree. Because, I mean, there's what's there in Zimbabwe now? I mean, you dig 3 meters, you get to China anyway, because they own the minerals. But apart from that, there's nothing else really there.
While they are a rising power, they still don't have unlimited resources to spend however they want. And so the US is a much safer ally and a much better economic partner in many ways.
But what's so scary about the ANC attitude is that it's kind of following behind, it's like a puppy dog following behind China, because it is nominally a communist state. I mean, the ANC is still sitting where it was in the early 60s when everyone in the ANC turned to communism. And that is pathetic. The world changes, and we're not changing with it.
But it's actually so funny sometimes to just look at the Communist Party of South Africa and some people in the ANC. It's like these people playing dress up at pretend to be in the 1960s or something. And, you know, the terms like comrade is still used. It's like, I mean, places there were actually communist in Europe and so on. I mean, they've moved on. Even the Chinese and the Vietnamese have moved on. The only place that's really commie these days is Cuba and North Korea. I don't know, Venezuela maybe. But, I mean, that's something still technically a democracy. But I mean,
not places that are well known for their prosperity and good fortune. So anyway, yes, this I think is a very good piece of news that Mike Pompeo said this, and we'll have to see how the government reacts and whether it sees that the consequences of continuing with disastrous policies like EWC.
Well, but I mean, the thing is, we've got to remember that the ANC doesn't see Zimbabwe and ZANU-PF as a cautionary tale.
Yeah,
it sees it as a model. I mean, it's a place where all the evidence from the last couple of years makes it very hard for me to believe that the ANC wants to govern a prosperous, a diverse democracy. It just, I mean, all the policy moves make me think they want to govern, you know, kind of a place where 90% of the people are scratching out or trying to scratch out a living on some godforsaken piece of land somewhere. They're interested in governing a complex industrial state. And that's all, I mean, all the policies from last couple of years make me think that's what the ANC wants.
I think if the bizarreness of wanting that, and I think Marius is right, is that the admiration for Venezuela and particularly for Zimbabwe is they've shown how you do it to stay in power. It doesn't matter what you do to stay in power, it's how you do it to stay in power. And I think this is first and foremost in the ANC's mind.
Very troubling indeed. Speaking of trouble, let's talk about our little neighbor, Lesotho, which, Maurice, you were telling me that there is trouble afoot again
in
that mountainous country.
Apparently, Tom Tabane, who's the Prime Minister of Lesotho, is going to be charged with murder tomorrow. So it's quite something. So
this is after his ex-wife was...
Yeah, it's...
Or his estranged wife.
His estranged wife, yeah. She was shot dead 2 days before his inauguration in 2017.
And so, I know his wife had been under investigation.
So she's actually... His new wife is actually... she's been caught by the Lesotho police and she's actually on trial for murder, which are going to go ahead next month. So, I mean, things are... It's quite... if we think we've got some interesting politics here, I think Lesotho almost beats us. But, I mean, it's an interesting place. I mean, we've seen what's happened now with, murder and all this kind of stuff going on. And it's crazy. I mean, Lesotho only has about 2 million people. It's quite a homogenous society. Nearly all the people there are Sotho and speak Sotho as their first language. Yet they've got 120 seats in their parliament and there's 12 parties represented. And they have, it's all like very, these parties get 1 or 2% and they make it into, and we've got the same thing here, but we've got 60 million people and far more diverse population than Lesotho. But I think what I was reading, part of the problem in Lesotho is that there's basically nothing there. I mean, their two exports are water and people, really. And so if you are somebody in Lesotho, the only way to really get ahead is through politics. That's why it actually gets so violent and there's such high stakes. I mean, if you don't make it in politics, you're actually going to be living in poverty. And I think we actually see something similar here in South Africa where we see councillors getting, especially in rural parts of South Africa, especially in KwaZulu-Natal to a degree, other parts of Free State and Eastern Cape, where people get murdered because they're fighting to become councillors in their local municipality because that's the only way to middle class life for many people. So that's why these fights are so vicious and so so violent often.
That's what happens when you don't think you need to grow your economy.
Exactly. I think it's been a very troubled country. South Africa has intervened in Lesotho I think twice since 1994. There was once in
98 was the first time.
Yeah, 98, and then there was another more recent one, which wasn't as dramatic, but was still sort of effectively a military intervention. Well, although South Africa used police, I think, instead of the army.
I remember in 1998, Nelson Mandela was actually, was on a state visit somewhere, and Mangosuthu Buthelezi was acting president. And there were jokes that say, he's like, now he's going to start this sort of South African expansion for Leobon Ramo. Guys, it takes over Lesotho and whatever. But apparently, in the beginning, the South Africans got a bit of a, and I think we invaded the Botswana. Mm. We got a bit of a bloody nose in the beginning, but I think then.
I think there was a lack of expectation that there would be any real resistance. And also, exactly. they made mistakes. They didn't have. We didn't have cell phones, GPS, Google Maps, and that sort of thing. So they had to ask for directions.
They didn't know where they were going.
And apparently they raised the South African flag instead of the SADC flag at somewhere. So people thought there's not an occupying, or felt there was an occupying force rather than somebody just came to restore peace and order and whatever.
It is a very troubled country, and it's something that the sort of ANC government has never really seemed to come up with an effective solution for. I mean, Lesotho does have significant... It's this disorder sort of bleeds into South Africa. It means that more people from Lesotho come here to work. It means that there's lots of stock theft on the borders of Lesotho. I know some farmers who've had their property basically dragged from the Transkei up to the Lesotho Mountains. So it is a problem for South Africa. And I think that the government really needs to kind of come up with a new approach to stabilize our neighbor.
But it is quite, I mean, an anomaly of history. I mean, it's the only country of any size that's completely surrounded by another country. And I mean, it's quite, we take it for granted, but sometimes I just think about it. If you didn't really know anything about South Africa and you looked at it, you're like, why is this little weird country in the middle of it? That doesn't make sense.
But of course, their fortunes are tied to our fortunes. Our government is just taking our fortunes and squandering them.
Well, I think, I mean, when we were talking about China earlier, I think South Africa is kind of an analog to China in Southern Africa. You know, if South Africa is doing well, then Southern Africa will do well. And if South Africa sinks, which I don't know, I mean, that's kind of the trend at the moment. I mean, then it's going to take a lot of Southern Africa with it. So, I mean, if our economy goes down, that's big problems for Southern Africa as well, especially Lesotho and Swaziland or Eswatini. We rely especially on South Africa to a huge amount for their economy and also for receipts from SACU and so on.
And Zimbabwe too.
Exactly, yeah. So,
well, let's hope that the instability can be resolved and that them having their prime minister on trial for murder does not cause another chaotic episode as has happened in the past couple of decades. And that South Africa is not needed to intervene again because, quite frankly, we have our own problems right now. But anyway, thank you very much for listening to The Daily Friend Show. If you like the work that we do, please SMS your name to 32823. Spread our podcast. Subscribe to it on any of the podcast apps, on iTunes, on Google Play. And thank you very much for listening. And we will catch you tomorrow on the filmed version of The Daily Friend podcast.